This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday Sporting Edition of Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt. A tough week at the office for Vanuatu's cricketers who are facing a hard fight to avoid relegation.
We finished in the bottom two and we have to qualify again for the next round as well. It will be not easy for us to take on the other countries as well, but we'll see what happens, mate.
The Rugby League World Cup may be over, but for the Blue Army of Toa Samoa fans, the excitement lingers on with the big homecoming prepared for the players in Brisbane tomorrow. And as Samoa's miracle man starts out on his Super Rugby journey with Moana Pacifica, we hear from the coach who nurtured him along the way to the professional ranks.
I met the kid and I know straight away he's going to be a superstar because his attitude and the commitment to the sport, and it's not a kid that talks a lot, but he does the job on the field, if you know what I mean.
More to come about Miracle Failangi from Afa Hanipale, manager of the Lakapi Samoa Academy, later in the programme. First, though, there are big changes ahead for the World Rugby Sevens Series, with the men's event to be trimmed from 16 teams to 12 in line with the women's competition. The number of rounds will be cut from 10 to 7, and all seven will feature the men's and women's events being played side by side. There'll also be a new playoff system for teams like Tonga, who have been striving to break into the core group for a number of years now, with eight teams fighting it out for four places in the following season's World Series. World Rugby say they consulted widely before putting the new competition structure together, but no one seems to have told Tonga and their chief executive, Peter Harding.
We won the Oceania and we qualified to go to the Challenger Series and would be expected, like last year. We didn't win that Challenger Series. We almost got there, but we're just off. We would have expected to go to a Challenger Series this year and, you know, have a simple promotion relegation, but it seems like that's off the cards now. They've announced the top league. It'd be interesting to see how they're going to go about working out who goes up and who goes down. That's going to be fascinating.
So are we in for a hiatus during 2023? Because this model is going to start in December next year. So it would be 2024 before we would hope Tonga would be in the mix to go into this new qualifying event that they're going to introduce.
Who knows? We were just very happy to win the Oceania. It was a fantastic result and a really good reflection on how the coach, Tavita, and the manager, Richard, have put the team together, especially with the difficulties of this year. And we would have expected to go to wherever that was and go in and win that particular competition. I'm not sure how it's going to work out, to be honest. I haven't received anything from World Rugby on how we do get into that top level. I can see that a number of teams or a number of unions will reevaluate what they're doing with sevens. Like, if they're on the cusp and they're not the best funded union, they might decide to put less funding into sevens now because there's no guarantee of them being in that top group. They have to go through a rigorous qualification period. Now, that doesn't bother us because we're always living hand to mouth anyway, so we're quite used to that and we're quite good at handling it. But I could see that some other nations might think, oh, we've put $1 million into this seven side and we're on the cusp. And they'll have to reevaluate how they go about things, budget-wise.
So the revamping of the qualification for the core group, it might actually assist Tonga in that case, might it? Because what you're going to have is you're going to have the bottom four teams in the core group going into a series of matches against the top four teams from the Challenger Series, which clearly over the last couple of competitions would have included Tonga. It gives you a better chance, doesn't it, of breaking into the core group?
I think that you're right. After you rang me, I sort of started thinking a bit doom and gloom by the way things are going to go. But then I realised that there are a number of unions that aren't particularly well funded who are on the circuit quite proud of it, and they do fund their sevens team very, very well. Now, if they're not guaranteed being on the circuit, they're definitely going to reevaluate the amount of money they put in. So it's going to be interesting to see how it comes out. I think you're perfectly correct there. And, you know, it took me a while to get to it, but I think that's what we've got to think about.
So therefore, as far as Tonga is concerned, you will continue to move forward building the men's team. And of course, you've now started building the women's team as well. And I guess the chances for them to get into the core group would also increase.
We have a very talented group of women. They're all basically under 20, 21. They did very well against more experienced teams in the Oceania. I'm sure that with a year's training, they'll be much better off. And there is the potential of them springing a surprise and going up, yeah.
And are you in agreement with the World Series being cut from 10 to 7 events for the men? All 7 events will be men's and women's events running in parallel. And also equal pay, it appears, for the men and the women. I don't think anybody would argue against that.
Women's sevens rugby is the fastest growing sport in the world, apparently. It's just taking off. The enthusiasm and the professionalism, their application is phenomenal. So I wouldn't say the funding is fantastic. I think it's going to be a challenge for anybody who wants to stay in the circuit because there's not much room to slip up, is there? So it's going to be very, very tense. Last year, the price of airfares, they skyrocketed and had a dire effect on funding for the Seven Circuit. So I'm sure that this particular decision has been made with that in mind. And I don't find any surprise that they've actually contracted the series just to make it more financially viable.
But what it does do, I suppose, it would seem to rule out once and for all the faint hope that we've had in the Pacific that maybe the World Series might come to Fiji one day.
I think you're probably right. Fiji better put their queues in the rack and wait a bit longer to see where the flight costs go down a bit.
But overall, do you think these changes will benefit the core men's competition? Because we're 12 teams rather than 16, and the threat of four into the relegation zone, as it were, the competition on the field is going to be even more intense than it is currently, isn't it?
The competition will be harder and faster. It's just exactly the same question you would put to, the people who ran Super Rugby for so long. Why expand it? You're just diluting the quality. So I think that if you have a look at the competition amongst the top six, top eight, top 10, those games are always very close. The next four, I think what you've got to do is when you've got a competition like that, are you going to get people just bounce up and down between one level and the next over the years? I think probably that what that will do is make sure that those teams that do bounce around are eliminated to start with, make the competition far more competitive, as you said, because it's much closer between that 1 to 12. The issue that I would have when you look at it is if you're a union, how do you budget for the year after if you know you're in that bottom four and you could potentially get beaten by a person in the qualifying group? We could potentially beat a number of those teams, 13 to 16 at the moment. There's no doubt a couple of those teams could get beaten by us. How do you raise money to put a team onto the circuit the year after? Because the Seven Circuit is a very expensive exercise. You do get grants for it, but it doesn't cover everything. It's going to make things quite complicated.
Yeah, that could very well be true. But in Tonga's case, as Peter Harding suggested, they don't have a lot of money anyway. So maybe they are able to manoeuvre the new world of World Sevens better than some other nations. That was Peter Harding, Chief Executive Officer for the Tonga Rugby Union, on the line from Nuku'alofa. Here with Pacific Beat for a Friday morning. Richard Hewitt here with some sporting stories for you. And it's been a tough week for the national men's cricket team from Vanuatu in the heat and humidity of Malaysia as they seek to hold on to their place in World Cup Challenge League A. It all started brightly enough with a hard-fought win over Singapore, but it was followed by defeats against the host nation and Qatar. They still have two games to go, but Vanuatu's captain Patrick Matatava says even with two unlikely wins, they can't escape now from the relegation zone.
Yeah, that's right. We finished in the bottom two and we have to qualify again for the next round as well. At the moment, it's not looking good for us.
I think as things stand, Malaysia will be in there with you, and I believe Italy and Bermuda from the other group, and then four teams from lower down will come in, and the eight of you will fight it out for places in the higher division. So it's going to be quite a battle for Vanuatu, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Bermuda is coming in and the other teams as well, so it will be not easy for us to take on the other countries as well. But yeah, we'll see what happens, mate.
After that first up win against Singapore, you as captain and the team must have been in pretty confident mood. But against Qatar and against Malaysia, bit of the old problem, wasn't it, really, that you just couldn't score enough runs?
Exactly, mate. I think that's the problem with our team is we didn't score enough runs for the bowlers to get up in the field. But yeah, I think the batters didn't do the job. The top six didn't do the job really well. We scored a big total, like 200 plus, to give us the bonus, something to do with the event. So I think that's the thing we're struggling to be about, is we didn't score enough runs, and it affected us in the last two games.
Why do you think that was? Because I'm thinking you had one innings in particular where you occupied the crease for quite a time, but you seem to be finding it hard to score. I mean, are the conditions just difficult?
The conditions are a bit difficult, yeah. So it's pretty hard as well, and the wicket is playing up a bit. Sometimes it gets up and sometimes stay low. So it's plenty on your mind. You have to get forward in every ball. But yeah, the conditions are not suitable to us, and that's where it plays up in your mind.
And in the game against Qatar, you didn't bowl. Do you have an injury problem, or was there another reason for that?
It's not about the injury. It's about giving the other boys the opportunity to bowl. Those two opening bowlers, they didn't bowl much in the game against Singapore and Malaysia. The other one is coach told us to give me and Malin the rest, so we can bowl in the last two games with the overload that we're doing. bowling and batting. So it's just giving us a rest. That's why they give the other two bowlers a chance to bowl.
So can we expect then perhaps some changes in the team for the last two matches coming up against Denmark and Canada? Because clearly you want to win, but results in essence don't matter now. So maybe this is an opportunity for you as a team to experiment a little.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. I think the last two games will be playing a maybe slightly different team and maybe we're changing. Because all of the reserve players except one, so he might get the chance to play the next two games. So give him a chance to feel part of the team. So yeah, it's not easy for me as a captain to decide the final 11, but I think it's a better thing to do is give him a chance to bowl and have a game.
And what about Denmark? Because you played club cricket over there. You've coached over there in Denmark. Do you have a bit of inside knowledge on what the Danes might have to offer?
Yeah, I know most of players from Denmark, so I play against them. I know what they like, the bowling attack and the batting and so. So yeah, it's a good thing for us that I'm in there. So I can give some of my bowlers and batters an insight of that, to when they go out to bat and they go out to bowl. I think that's the big thing, that I know all the players from Denmark and what they can do. So yeah, I'll be a big part of that when we play against Denmark in a few days.
And once this tournament is over, what are your future plans? Do you intend to go back to Denmark or do you have something else in mind?
That's a good question. To be honest, some of the Denmark boys, they asked me to play for the club the next season, but I haven't given them the answer yet. We'll see when I get back home. I might contact them if I want to go for the next season. But I might take a break and stay on with my family for the big seasons coming up, especially Christmas and New Year's. Maybe next year I'll be going back to Denmark. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm sure Denmark would be very glad to have him back on the scene over there. That's Patrick Matatava, captain of the Vanuatu men's cricket team, on the line from Malaysia. And incidentally, Canada, who will play Vanuatu on Monday, they've already sealed the League A title and they'll now join five other teams, including Papua New Guinea, to battle for a place at the final World Cup qualifier. That'll be in Zimbabwe next year. Friday morning here on Pacific Beat. Carl Evans is with me to take a look at some of the stories making news headlines around the Pacific this morning. So first to Vanuatu, and no new nurses to be trained in country, at least for the next 5 years. So what's the story there?
Yeah, that's right. So the Ministry of Health is embarking on a new 5-year transition plan to establish a new nursing training provider. And this comes following an audit raised a number of concerns within the current training provider, which is the Vanuatu College of Nursing Education, and basically rated them as very poor. So as a result, the college is now going to look into training their nurses abroad and are currently consulting with the National Scholarship Office to figure out the best way to do that. While in the meantime, the college will look at addressing some of those concerns raised in the audit, which ultimately forced them to suspend enrollment. So yeah, not the most positive story all up. So let's hope they can get it fixed within that 5-year period.
Well, indeed. Although I suppose ultimately it's all about patient care, isn't it? So if that's the way they have to achieve it, so be it. Now, Solomon Islands, they've unveiled plans to boost national security at airports. What's the problem? What are they doing about it?
Yeah, so the government's looking to streamline its international entry procedures by introducing a facial biometric system upon entry. So it all sounds a little bit like Total Recall, doesn't it? So this is reported by SIBC, and they say the system will operate as an online platform which automates passenger identity verification, analyzes travel documents, and ultimately reduces waiting time. So a bit of a one-stop shop, and it will also give authorities better visibility of who exactly is coming into the country before they arrive, just to ensure they tick all the required boxes and things like that. So a 3-month trial is going to begin soon, and yeah, look, I'm sure there's probably going to be some growing pains to get through regarding something like this, but it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
Well, all I can say is every time I go through Melbourne Airport and use their biometric system, it never works. And I have to go and see the man or the woman on the desk, just like we did in the old days. So anyway, so good luck with that, Solomon Islands. Now, the increasing divorce rate in Tonga is starting to cause concern.
Yeah, so Tonga's Ministry of Justice says the number of couples divorcing is increasing, with some marriages actually lasting as little as 2 weeks. So this is reported by RNZ, and it comes after new statistics revealed to Parliament actually showed the number of splits between couples aged 20 to 30 rose from 205 to 245 in 1 year alone, which actually came as a surprise to some MPs who, you know, thought that, you know, that education and Christian values are sort of, you know, in there to prevent a lot of that. It also actually showed there were 68 weddings with at least one person underage between 2020 and 2021, which, yeah, also caused a fair bit of concern as well. So, yeah, so interesting stuff there. I don't think that divorce rate would probably be exclusive to Tonga following the pandemic. I reckon if you went around the world a little bit, you'd probably find that's consistent everywhere. But who knows, maybe it's also a generational thing as well, Richard.
Yeah, particularly interesting that figure of 68 weddings with one half of the couple being underage. I'd be interested to know how that's been allowed to go ahead. And maybe that's the nub of the problem there, that they need to dig into that rather than the divorce rate, which, as you say, is pretty much common throughout the world these days. Carl, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Richard.
Carl Evans there with some of the stories making news headlines around the Pacific on this Friday morning. I'm Richard Ewart. You're with Pacific Beach. It's the Friday Sporting Edition, and it's nearly 3 weeks since Toa Samoa fell at the last hurdle at the Rugby League World Cup, going down 30-10 to Australia in the final. But that defeat did nothing to dampen the spirits of the Samoan fans, who are happy to celebrate their team's achievement in becoming the first side from the Pacific to make it to the deciding match. And those celebrations haven't stopped yet, because it will be party time in Brisbane tomorrow when the Toa Samoa players will be given a grand homecoming parade. We're joined now by the organiser of the event, Chris Brown from the Blue Army. Chris, good morning. Welcome to Pacific Beat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. And from what I've been seeing, what I've been reading, particularly your social media posts, I mean, this is going to be a big, big event, isn't it? I mean, can you give me an idea of the scale of it?
Oh, huge. It'll probably be the biggest one that Australia or New Zealand or the world has seen. So it's projected to look that way. So we've spent a lot of time and sleepless nights trying to get everything prepared. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. You know, besides all the stress and all the anxiety that I've gotten. But yeah, it's looking huge.
So what do you have planned exactly? I mean, how will the day play out tomorrow?
So we've got a couple of players, or more than a couple of players, that we've organised to come up from Sydney, and some Brisbane-based players. And then we'll start the parade at 11 a.m. We've got a few performances, showcase the players, and it's just an opportunity for the people to meet their heroes. We've got some acts. We've even flown acts from New Zealand just to entertain the people, and just to, at the end of the day, just to provide a safe space for everyone to celebrate. So, a bit of this, a bit of that.
So it's going to be an all-day event by the sound of it. I'm guessing you know when it's going to start, but maybe you're not too sure about when it will end.
Yeah, just like with any Samoan event, it'll probably start late and finish late. So, yeah, we're due to finish around 5 p.m., but who knows?
Now, again, I mean, looking at the build-up to this through your social media posts, there's been a big drive, I know, for volunteers. I mean, you're calling on fans to serve their community tomorrow. You're looking for security people to look after car parks, crowd control, first aid, people to clean up afterwards. And basically, you know, the response, I imagine, has been pretty big, hasn't it? Also, not least because there is a reward. Yeah. You'll get to keep your Rugby League Samoa Queensland high-vis vest. That's a prize worth having, isn't it?
Nah, definitely is. It's been the response has been amazing. There was a link that went up yesterday for registration for volunteers, and people even before that have been putting up their hands to even donate their hard-earned money to make this event happen. I mean, it's a free event for everyone to attend, but it costs us to put these things on. So everybody's been amazing, wanting to chip in, and it's just proud Samoans, you know, wanting to put up their hand and volunteer. So we've received nearly over, you know, close to 100 applications for volunteers, but it's just going through that process of making sure we get the right personnel in the right areas.
Now, tell me about flags, because the Samoan flags have been hard to come by for several weeks now. And I know that more flags were being made for this event tomorrow, but I gather they've sold out as well. Am I right?
Yeah, they probably have, yeah. So we've had a lot of people who have ordered in flags. So just normal Samoans, they've ordered in their own flags. And, you know, those flags, I just see people post up, hey, flags available, and then they're all sold out before Saturday. So, and then, man, the England game, even after the Tonga game and England game, flags were hard to come by, especially here in Brisbane. So, and Sydney, we saw it in Sydney, Melbourne. Even in New Zealand, people were struggling to find flags. So I assume, especially in Brisbane, that's the same case this week. Yeah, we've got a lot of people trying to look for flags.
Well, I know where there's one because I followed a car on the road into Melbourne the other day with a big Samoan flag on the back. So, yeah, as you say, it's all happening Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. But what's particularly interesting is that Rugby League Samoa have now confirmed that the team will be going home to Samoa for a celebration a couple of days after Christmas. I mean, that's going to be a fantastic occasion, isn't it, for the people on the islands there? And, do you think there will be people from the diaspora that will try and get over to Samoa for that celebration too and share with their family over there?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it's the people deserve it. I think the boys deserve it as well. And I've always said that the people of Samoa deserve it. Rugby league is still a growing game back home. So it'll be vital for the game of rugby league back in Samoa for them to welcome their heroes. I mean, you know, it was amazing for the guys who came before them, but now this team has made some noise in the World Cup, so it'll be a huge party. They'll probably call a public holiday, make it official, and there's definitely already talks. I mean, I'm close with some of the major sponsors, Pacific Cast, Q Legal there for Rugby League Samoa, so it's definitely a planned trip that I want to have, and other people are talking about it, but you know that the boys and their families and their villages will be there to celebrate them. And I hope the government of Samoa really roll out the red carpet for the boys because they deserve it. They're heroes to a lot of people.
One last question, sport and politics, this one. Do you think that Samoa should remain as a Tier 2 nation, or do you think they've done enough, regardless of the complications surrounding who plays Origin and who doesn't, that they should be promoted to Tier 1?
Oh, it's a headache. At the end of I don't know what Tier 1 offers, whether that's more money, but I think Tier 2 at the moment, I like the way it is. I mean, for me personally, I think without those boys of Samoan or Tongan or Polynesian descent, takes a bit of flavour out of Origin, and that's no offence to, you know, the born Aussies, but it would take that, you know, imagine Origin without a To'o or Loa, you know, the characters of the game. You got Bolo as well, and then Papali for Queensland. But at the end of the day, you know, I'll be proud to see the boys choose, if they go to Tier 1, to choose Samoa, and they'll be giving up a hefty paycheck. But, you know, regardless, you know, Tier 1, Tier 2, there's talks of changes in the rules, but I think Tier 2 is good for us for now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a remarkable year, and making that final, that's a huge step forward, just not for Samoa, but for Rugby League around the Pacific. Yeah. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to you guys who've supported them all the way through. And it's been a bit of a bumpy ride for Samoa on Rugby League over the last few years. But I hope it goes extremely well for you tomorrow, Chris. And I hope everybody turns out in great numbers and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, lads. Thank you.
No worries.
Thanks,
Chris,
for having me.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us on Pacific Beat this morning. That's Chris Brown from the Blue Army, who's organising that welcome home parade for Toa Samoa in Brisbane tomorrow. Most, if not all, of the players will be there. Quite a lot of them do have Queensland connections, and that event will go on for most of the day, I would imagine. Something to look forward to if you're a Rugby League fan of Samoa or not in Brisbane tomorrow. If you're not, within striking distance, head down. You could have a really good day. You're with Pacific Beats here on ABC Radio Australia. It's the Friday morning sporting edition. And the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris are still 20 months away, but for Vanuatu's top women beach volleyballers, the qualification period has already begun in earnest. The plan is for four players to clock up the 12 events they need to be in the shake-up for a place at the Games in France. And with Vanuatu's number one and dual Commonwealth Games bronze medalist Mila Pata taking a break at the moment, the recent Great Ocean Road Volley Fest in Australia offered some of the next generation a chance to stake their claim, including Bella Lawak.
I've learned so much in this past three events because it helps me grow. Now I'm confident, and yeah, even if we fail, we learn. If we fail, we become stronger. Like, we have a strong mind, and it builds us to grow more in the future and have more experience.
Keeping a watchful eye on Bella and her three teammates, Tini Toko, Lottie Joe and Chantal Willey, during their respective tournaments in Torquay on Victoria's Surf Coast was vastly experienced coach Steve Anderson.
This has been really valuable for us. So we've had all these different events, different levels, so we get to try different combinations. And we've got a couple of our future athletes here. So they get a chance to play together instead of with senior athletes. So they get to practice their leadership. They get to feel the nerves. So playing at the different levels, playing the different roles, it's invaluable. We should be in the off season, but we couldn't miss this opportunity.
Coach Anderson is very conscious of the need to clock up elite competition hours for his younger players as they eye off an Olympic place, which Vanuatu has missed out on so narrowly in the past.
They may have to play as part of the qualification for Paris. So we have to get them experience. We went 2.5 years where they didn't get to travel. And then we had to play the Continental Cup for the Tokyo qualification. And we don't want to do that again. So qualifying for Paris, we may need four athletes. And right now we have two with international experience, really. So that's why we've got these young athletes out here getting through the first stage and feeling like they belong on the world stage.
However, getting to that point is by no means easy, particularly when cultural and family demands come into the equation. But Bella Lawak is sharply focused and takes inspiration from her teammate and Vanuatu's most successful sportswoman.
It means so much, and I'm very honored to represent my country, and also, yeah, like, beach volleyball can take me, like, visit all the place around the world. Yeah, like, go and participate. And also, yeah, having friends and, yeah, create relationship, like, with other countries. And, yeah, I love so much beach volleyball because Mila is my role model. So, yeah, I love to become like her.
I'm Mila Pata. I'm a player of beach volleyball. And I am a strong woman. I love doing sport. It's make me happy and keep me healthy, and that's why I'm doing this.
And Steve Anderson has enormous faith in Mila Pata and her young teammates, not least, he says, because they learn fast compared to players he's worked with from other nations, including Australia and Canada.
Interesting enough, the Vanuatu team, they pick up the systems about 3 times faster than some of the other countries. And these athletes pick up the systems. They learn. It's experiential learning. So if you look at Miller and Tinny's performance at the Birmingham Commonwealth Games, we all had COVID, so we really didn't get a chance to practice leading into it. But they picked the system up, and we've mastered our style of play, which is based off of ball control and serving. So we can get the younger athletes to learn that. We do a lot of neuroscience, so we actually have to find a translation in Bislama. So they're doing all this work, but I teach it different to them than I would teach it to Canadian or an Australian team, just because of learning style.
Away from the sand, there is much work to be done behind the scenes to keep the Olympic dream on track and in the long run to leave the sport of beach volleyball in Vanuatu in local hands.
We got to look at the finances. We have to look at collaborating with other teams to get that international experience. We've got to get out of Vanuatu and travel. And we have to have a complete pathway from identification through development all the way to high performance. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm only the coach for 2 years. Mila's the assistant coach. She'll be the head coach in 2 years post-Paris. Now we need 3 new Vanuatu coaches who we can train, so over the next 5 years, Vanuatu can become self-sufficient.
Meanwhile, Bella Lawak stands ready to answer her country's call, perhaps most likely for the Los Angeles Olympics in 2028. But she says Paris is not out of the question.
I think I can do it. I will progress. I'm just 21 years old, so I don't have, like, family, like boyfriend or anything. So and my parents, they always support me to pursue my dreams, my goals. And yeah, they're very happy that, yeah, I come all around the places in the world so that I can represent my country and also them. Like, yeah, they're really proud of me.
You talked about Mila being your role model, and Mila's very famous in Vanuatu, isn't she? Is that something that you feel you can deal with?
Yeah, I'd be famous, but Mila, she's a very humble girl, and yeah, she represents all the girls in Vanuatu in beach volleyball.
The success of the beach volleyball program has redefined the role of women in sport in Vanuatu over a number of years now, but like other sports in the country, notably cricket, it also plays a much broader role in the well-being of the nation.
We're using sport to benefit the country, so how do we look at type 2 diabetes, which is preventable? Well, these women are role models. They've changed the way women are perceived in the country through their performance, through the way that they live their life, and I think we can do the same thing to help influence the way people eat and healthy lifestyle and help eradicate some of the NCDs, not just in Vanuatu, but through the Pacific Islands. That's the power of sport. You got to have a higher purpose, and that's our higher purpose. But you also have to get results. So that's our dual mission right now, get results. And with those results, we get a platform. And that platform represents something bigger than yourself.
And Vanuatu have done it. The most remarkable of comebacks. 10-21, 22-20, 15-10. Please give it up for Vanuatu as your Commonwealth Games bronze medalist.
People's lives have been affected by a disaster.
Disasters are inevitable, but losing your home or your life isn't.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
Learn what to do before, during, and after natural disasters in this program aimed at keeping you safe.
I'm a survivor.
Pacific Prepared, Fridays at 8:30 a.m. PNG time here on ABC Radio Australia.
That's to come, but right now you're with Pacific Beats here on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart, and it's the Friday morning sporting edition. And as Moana Pacifica continue the build-up to their second season in Super Rugby Pacific, one player in particular will be itching to get out on the park. He's the first player to be chosen by Moana, who has come through the local academy in Samoa, and he's the only player in the squad never to have played Super Rugby before. His name is Miracle Failangi, and he's a 23-year-old loose forward who has already represented his country in rugby sevens. He was spotted by the Moana coaching team at the last Pacific Rugby Combine, but before that, he was identified by Afa Hanipali, the manager of the Lakapi Samoa Academy, who has nurtured Miracle on his pathway to a professional contract.
I met the kid, and I know straight away he's going to be a superstar because his attitude and the commitment to the sport. And it's not a kid that talks a lot, but it does the job on the field, if you know what I mean. And all the other kids from Mota'ai and Lauli'i, they were all good players. You probably noticed there are a few Lauli'i boys in the sevens. And then there's some great talents from Mota'ai as well. So the three that I got under my sleeve was Paul Falongo, flanker captain for Mota'ai. And then Miracle from Wailele. And then Paul Eti from Lauli'i. So when I opened my sports shop in Samoa, there were the three that I wanted close to me. And then I got them work at the shop. And then the rest was from there.
How big a jump do you think this is going to be for him? Or do you think he will settle very nicely in the world of Super Rugby if he gets a chance to turn out for the first 15?
I think he will fit right in. He was the captain of the combine. And it wasn't only the Moana Pacifica coaches were there. There was other coaches from Fiji and, you know, the Drua and even the Player Association coaches that were there. So they were quite impressed with him. Brian got him into the sevens for a while. He spoke to me and he said, oh, if Mulianga picked them, will that be okay? And I said, well, it'll be good for you because he wants to play flanker, you know, fast flanker will be good for him. And then when they got back, it was already committed. He wants to focus on the 15 game, but that helped him confidence internationally. So for me, joining Super Rugby, I think he's going to do really well. And I wouldn't surprise if Mapusua and Manu Samoa pick him for the World Cup next year.
What message do you think this sends to other young players in Samoa? Because Miracle will be the only uncapped player in that side. But I presume that you and others involved in coaching players over there in Samoa will be hopeful that he's the first of many who will go to Moana and play Super Rugby.
So this is huge for Samoa. And opportunity is there for the kids in Samoa now. So the pathway is even wider now for them. There will be opportunity for them, not only New Zealand, Australia, even Europe, Japan. If they're willing to put in the hard work, I'm awaiting high school scholarship for three young lads from here going over, and then hopefully they do well in New Zealand. So the pathway here now with Miracle is huge.
Certainly looks that way for Hanipale, manager of the Lakapi Samoa Academy, who unearthed that new rugby union talent. And we wish him well with the Moana Pacifica when the new season kicks off, I think, in February of next year. Pacific Beat. Now, you'd think that any international goalkeeper who shipped 31 goals in a single game might never want to play for his country again, and certainly wouldn't be planning on a career that stretched over more than two decades. But they do things differently in American Samoa, and Nikki Salapu, the keeper in question from that historic World Cup game against Australia back in 2001, is still between the posts and plans to be there again at the Pacific Games in Solomon Islands next year when he will be well past 40. And this time it could be a family affair, because Nikki's son Dylan is about to make his international debut for American Samoa, and both he and his father are contemplating the prospect of playing together in Honiara.
Most definitely. Yes, my son is training very hard right now. We're about to depart for him to play for the U16 for American Samoa.
So is there a possibility that father and son could feature for the senior team next year?
I can't promise you that, but it will be possible.
You haven't played for American Samoa since the last Pacific Games. So what has happened in the intervening period? How often are you playing, and who are you playing for over there in the U.S.?
I'm playing for fun because I work a lot. I work 50 to 60 hours a week because I'm a technician for doing fire alarms and security stuff. But I play soccer when I can. I play for the 40 and over for a league up here in Seattle. And then I play for an Hispanic league sometimes. And then sometimes when I go train with my son's team, I'm always like practice with them. No matter what I do, it's always involved soccer. So I play three times a week.
Your first appearance for American Samoa was back in 2001. Pacific Games will be 2023 next year. So more than 20 years as an international player. But of course, it's been a long time between drinks, hasn't it? Because American Samoa don't play that often, unfortunately.
It's kind of hard to believe that, like, oh yeah, like 20 years ago when the first time I played for American Samoa. It is such a weird thing how fast time go by. And I totally forgot about some of the worst moments, but I always remember the best moments. So but in soccer since 2001.
I guess the best moment was that famous game where American Samoa beat Tonga, and it became the centerpiece of the Next Goal Wins documentary, the team's first ever World Cup qualification win. And now that film is being transformed into a Hollywood production, which I believe is going to be released sometime next year. What do you think about that? Have you seen any of it at all?
I saw a little part of the clips, but I haven't seen that much of it. You know, hopefully, like sometime in the beginning of next year, we'll see most of it before it comes out. But to be honest with you, I'm not a movie star. I'm just like a soccer player that loves the game, trying to be an idol for my son, for the young American Samoa generation. So I just want to be part of that, to motivate the young generations to become part of our soccer association in American Samoa and to represent our country.
Hi, Dylan. Good to speak to you. So your dad tells me you're heading over to American Samoa to play for the under-16s. And so do you take inspiration from your dad's experience playing for American Samoa? Have you always wanted to play for the territory?
Ever since I saw like the documentary and witnessed him leaving for these trips, always been inspired to play for the team. Ever since I was little, I've always wanted to play for the American Samoa team. And I've been training up to that point, trying to get there and making it a dream.
So have you considered the possibility that you and your dad could be in the same team at the Pacific Games in Solomon Islands next year?
Yeah, I've thought about it. You know, we've been talking about it, how like we've always wanted to be a father-son duo on the field, and that'd be really cool.
What, though, do you make of the famous game that your dad was unfortunately on the wrong end of against Australia all those years ago? How do you reflect on that? Many people say that the scoreline would have been even greater but for your dad's performance in goal.
It's always going to be there, but I always try to look at the good moments past it, you know, their comeback and, you know, everything, and try to inspire to come back, you know, put us on the map again and, like, make us, you know, a better team and, you know, maybe make it to a World Cup one day. That's really what I want to do.
And at the moment, you're playing club football there in Seattle?
Yeah.
And your ambition, would that be to play professionally at some point, maybe in the MLS or elsewhere?
Yeah, I'm trying to work up to that point. I've made it to the American Samoa team, but I want to go try to get a little bit farther than that. Maybe play Sounders one day or try to get to that point.
And what's your dad like as a coach?
He's very hard, but he's a really good coach. He's really helpful, and I wouldn't have got to where I am right now if it wasn't for him coaching me.
All right. I wish you the best of luck. Look forward to seeing how you go over there in American Samoa, and hopefully we'll see you in Honiara next year. Nikki, just a couple of other things I was going to ask you. You say you're aiming to play in Solomon Islands next year, and I'm told that Jaya is also aiming to play next year as well. Yeah. I'm not sure how old Jaya will be at that stage. A little younger than you, I think, but still well past 30. She keeps going, the only out transgender player in the world. It's a remarkable story, isn't it?
She'll always be part of the game. Always like motivate people to become better ambassador for each country they play for, and she's always motivate the young generations to dream big like she did.
And do you see yourself now very much as the father figure for the American Samoan team? Because I'm guessing if you play next year as you plan to, a lot of the players are going to be half your age, aren't they?
Well, I've been there in 2019. Most of the players that I play with for the Pacific Games, most of them were half of my age. So I try to keep motivating them and keep them perspective, like to respect the game, you know, to keep them in the right path of loving the game and enjoy what they play for.
Nikki Salapu, who has dedicated half his sporting life to playing for American Samoa, and he's not done yet. He'll always be remembered for that game back in 2001, but many people have said who saw it that it could have been even more than 31 goals if Nikki hadn't been between the posts. He pulled off some remarkable saves in extraordinary conditions, because most of the players who were playing for American Samoa that day weren't really meant to be there. They had visa and passport problems and had to put in a bunch of 15 and 16-year-olds against the first-choice Australian inside, so I suppose there was a certain amount of inevitability about it all. But Nikki has come through and he's still going strong, and we hope to see him in Honiara next year. Now, I should just mention the next round of the World Rugby Sevens coming up this weekend in Cape Town. Fiji had a bit of a bumpy ride last week when they missed out on the quarterfinals, which is most unusual for the Fijians. They're in a pool this week with Canada, with France, and also South Africa, who won the tournament in Dubai last week. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Fijians get back on the horse, as it were. But if we look at the standings, the top five nations, Fiji are fifth, then Ireland, France, Australia and South Africa are top. And all five of those nations have had a bad tournament and a very good tournament. So there seems to be a bit of a theme after just two rounds so far. So we'll see how it all plays out in Cape Town. As for the women, Fijiana, they're up against Brazil. They're also up against New Zealand, so that won't be easy. But they did beat them, of course, in the Olympics, famously. And their opening match of the tournament in Cape Town will be against Great Britain. So we wish Fiji, both the men's and women's team, every success. And also Samoa in the men's event, they have had a couple of reasonable performances, actually. 15 points in round one in Hong Kong, 10 points round two in Dubai last week. And they will be in a pool with the Irish, with Uruguay and Japan. So I would see Samoa making the quarterfinals fairly easily. And let's see where they go from there. And that rounds out this edition of Pacific Beat this Friday morning. Jordan Fennell will be along with the afternoon edition at 3:05 PNG time. Pacific Review at various times over the weekend. And then join us again on Monday at 6:05 PNG time with Priyanka Srinivasan. I'm Richard Hewitt. Have a great sporting weekend, especially if you're in Brisbane.